Morning. Today's daf and Sanhedrin's daf base. We are starting the new Masechta today, after almost a half a year in Baba Basra in terms of daf Yomi. So we are now turning our attention to the next stop along in Seder Nezikin, and that is Masechta Sanhedrin. The mitzvah in the Torah to set up a court. First of all, we can broaden out this mitzvah. We could talk about being universal law, meaning we know that there are seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach, meaning that for the whole world there's a certain set of laws that are set up. Of the seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach, there is one positive commandment, and that's to set up a court. The rest of them are negative isurim, negative prohibitions. But there's a mitzvah to set up a court. Now, to be fair and to be totally honest, there is a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban exactly what that court is going to do. According to the Rambam, that court is just going to adjudicate the other six averos of the seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach. But according to the Ramban and his Parashan Chumash, no, he disagrees. He says that the purpose of a court, even in terms of universal law, is to adjudicate. Meaning, we need a judicial system. We need order. We need a system of law. The rule of law. And so, therefore, according to the Ramban, a universal law that there's supposed to be a court system that's set up. And the world is supposed to abide by the court system in order to create some sort of order in this world. So that is the general universal law of dinim. And then for us, there is a mitzvah in the Torah to set up a court. The best place to point to in the Torah, in terms of the basic mitzvah setting up a court, is the beginning of Parsha Shoftim. The beginning of Parsha Shoftim, the Torah says, Shoftim v'shoshan titein lecha b'chol sharecha, that we have an obligation to set up both judges and enforcement in chol sharecha, in all of our gates, asher Hashem Elokecha nosein lach l'shvatecha, v'shaftu asa'am mishpat tzedek, and the purpose of which, of course, is to judge. And so we have a special mitzvah in the Torah to set up a court system. Okay, take a look over here. I'm not going to go through it right now, but take a look at the Ramban on that pasuk that I just quoted, and basically, and you're going to see it already in today's daf. This idea that there's going to be basically a system of court, which means that there's going to be a supreme court, which is referred to as the Sanhedrin, and then each shevet is also going to have their own supreme court. Meaning, the Torah says shoftim v'shoftim titen lecha b'chol she'arecha, and then the Torah goes on to say asher Hashem Elokecha nosein lecha lishvatecha, and the Ramban over there on his Parashan Chumash writes that every Shevet's going to have their own Supreme Court, so to say. Every Shevet has a Sanhedrin. And, in a similar way that the judicial system is set up here in our country, where you have the Supreme Court for the government, for the federal government, you have the Supreme Court by states. So, lahavdil, but in other words, in terms of a system, it's set up very similar. So that's the best place where I could show you in the Torah where there is a mitzvah in the Torah to set up a judicial system. To that end, we're now going to open up to the first daf of Sanhedrin, daf Beis Amud Aleph, the first Mishnah, and we're going to be learning about the court system. That's what we're going to be learning about over the next 113 blot of Gemara. So we're learning about the court system. Although I guess what you could do is you could take the 11th parak, which is the last like 20 some odd blot of our Masechta, and you could put that in its own separate category. The 11th parak, which is by far and away, in terms of interest, one of the most interesting prakim in all of Shas. So it talks about Olam Haba, it talks about Yemos Mashiach, it talks about Tchias HaMesim. It's an extraordinarily interesting parak. It's difficult, admittedly, discussing some of these abstract and esoteric concepts, but that's the 11th parak of Sanhedrin, so that I guess you could put in its own separate category, which is obviously at the end of the Masechta. But from here until the 10th parak of the Masechta, so we're talking about now the simple process of setting up a court. Our Masechta is super organized, meaning the first parak, first couple parakim, talk about just simply the setting up of a court, meaning what a court is going to look like, the structure of a court. And then from there going forward, the third parak, fourth parak, talks about monetary law. And then from there going forward, fifth parak talks about Kiddush HaChodesh. Sixth parak, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth, now go into capital cases. So basically it's a progression where it goes from, like, basically, if you will, lighter judicial law to much heavier judicial law, going from monetary cases to over to capital cases. A good amount of our Masechta talks about capital crime and capital cases. Okay. That is just a general overview of our Masechta. It comes obviously in Seder Nezikin. Again, just one more general global point, and then we'll start with the Mishnah itself. It comes in Seder Nezikin for obvious reasons, meaning we have been speaking about, since the beginning of Seder Nezikin, Baba Kama, Mitzia, and Basra, we've been talking about damages and the amount that you have to pay and what you have to pay. And now we're talking about basically enforcement, meaning you have to go to court and based on obviously with their given ability, with their rights and privileges of being a judge, is going to adjudicate all the laws that we learned up until now. So with that stated, we turn to the first Mishnah. Now the first Mishnah, just warning you, today's daf is going to be almost all Mishnah, meaning that sometimes the way they break it up is that you have a section of Mishnah and then the Gemara comments, and then another section of Mishnah and then the Gemara comments. And then for reasons which I don't know why, but it's just the way it is in terms of our Mishnah, all the Mishnahs are front-loaded in the beginning of the first Perek, and then the Gemara goes on to discuss every aspect that's discussed in the first Mishnah. So, in terms of breakup, it's not broken up piecemeal. It's one chunk of Mishnayos. Let's begin. The Mishnah starts off Dinei Mamonos B'Shlosha. So, when it comes to monetary law, so you need a court of three. So, one of the most basic tenets that we're going to be hearing again and again, it is the same opening line of the third parak as well, is that when it's a monetary case, so you need a court of three. Why do you need a court of three? So, stay tuned later today. Tomorrow, we're going to be discussing where the source of this is that you need a court of three. Gzeilos V'Chavos B'Shlosha. Now, when it comes to theft and when it comes to damages, bodily damages, so you need a court of three. Now, the Mishnah seems to be somewhat redundant, as the Mishnah tells us that for monetary cases you need three, and for theft and for bodily damage you need three. Those are also monetary cases. Why would the Mishnah break that up? Please stay tuned. The Gemara is going to be discussing that, and so that's going to be our first discussion in the Gemara, but that's coming up a little bit later on. Nezek v'chatzi nezek tashlumei kefa v'tashlumei arba v'chamisha b'shlosha. When it comes to damages, when it comes to half damages, remember, we learned back all the way in Baba Kama, that when a ox that has no record or very little record of damaging in the past, it's what's called a short tom. If he, the ox, damages a person or another or somebody else's property, so the owner of the ox only has to pay chatzi nezek, half damages. So half damages and full damages. Tashlumi kefal, a thief that gets caught with the stolen goods. Tashlumi arba v'chamisha, the payment of 4 and 5. If you are a thief and you compound your thievery with either selling the stolen item or shechting the stolen item, obviously we're talking about an animal, so you have to pay on certain occasions, under certain times, 4 to 5 times the amount of the animal itself. Again, go back to Baba Kama for more details about that. B'shlosha, so this is going to be adjudicated in front of a court of three. And again, I can make the same point, which is the Mishnah seems to be redundant, meaning it's basically a monetary case. So assuming that they're monetary cases, so why would the Mishnah once again tell us, and you need to be done in front of a court of three? Again, the Gemara is going to obviously be sensitive to this issue, and the Gemara is going to ask these questions, and we're going to come back around to this point a little bit later on this morning. Ha'onis v'amefata v'amotzi shemra b'shlosha, divrei Meir. When it comes to either rape or seduction or motzi shemra, Motzi Shemra is when a man marries a woman and then accuses her of not being a basula. So these are also monetary cases, and therefore it's going to be done in front of a court of three. Divrei Meir, that is the opinion of Rav Meir. The Chachamim omri Motzi Shemra b'esim v'shlosha. Now the Chachamim say no, that when it comes to Motzi Shemra, it's done in front of a court of 23. Why? Mimnei sheyesh bo din nefashos, because this could potentially become a capital crime. Now by Motzi Shemra, he's accusing his wife of not being a basula, which means, of course, is that he expected her to be a basula. She was promoted to be a basula, and it turns out that she wasn't. And now, obviously, it leads to the basic question of, if he's right, well, if he's wrong, so that is libel. And the Torah has punishments for the man for libeling his newlywed wife. If he's right, so then, of course, it leads to the simple question of, well, when was she with another man? And was she with another man during the Kedushin stage? And if that's so then that's called adultery. And then that's a capital crime. So it could potentially lead to a capital case. So the Chachamim say that being that Motzei Shemra at least potentially could be a capital case, so start the court with 23, don't start with 3. Okay. Makos b'shlosha. Now, in terms of if it's a case that has to do with makos, if it has to do with lashes, so it's done in front of a court of three. Mishum Rabbi Shmuel amru be'esrim v'shlosha. And in the name of Rabbi Shmuel, they say that it should be done in front of a court of 23. So it's lashes a, so to say, a civil case, or is it a capital case? That seems to be the debate between the two, but again, the Gemara is going to give more explanation in terms of what is the machlokus over here regarding the case of makos, whether it's done in front of 3 or 23. Iber HaKodesh. Now, we know that the calendar, although nowadays we don't put much thought into the calendar because it's all done for us. So, and the calendar is set. And the calendar has been set for the last 1,700 years. However, in the good old days, the calendar was not a set, was not set in stone. And basically, both in terms of a month and in terms of the year, so there was fluctuation. I'll say it briefly now, and later in this particular paragraph, we're going to be learning much more details about this. The lunar month is 29 days, 12 hours, and, okay, if you want to know, 793 chalakim out of 1,080. Okay, I don't know why I have a particular interest in calendar and in months, and I like math a little bit, so all this speaks to me. So, anyway, a lunar month is, but I'll say it simple. A lunar month is 29 and a half days. Okay, not exactly. And so therefore, obviously, it creates fluctuation in that a month can sometimes be 29 days and the month is sometimes 30 days. We're not going to make a month 29 and a half days, meaning we're going to only operate a month in terms of a unit of days. So therefore, it allows us now for a month to be either or. What is that going to be determined by? So we go back to Masechet Rosh Hashanah. We've learned this before together. And that is that we're going to have witnesses actually see the sliver of the new moon, right? When there is a new moon, you will be seeing it immediately after sunset, right? Upon the new moon will be following the sun in the western sky and the trajectory as the sun sets, the new moon is going to be exactly behind it. And so when the witnesses see the new moon, so they're going to run to basin, they're going to say, we saw the new moon, and the basin will be Mekadosh Lechodesh, so sanctify the month. And this is a process of sanctifying the new month. Okay, so the Mishnah is telling us that Iber HaChodesh, that when it comes to the court that's going to be establishing this new month, so it's going to be in front of a court of three. Iber HaChodesh B'Shlosha. Iber HaShana B'Shlosha. Divrei Meir. Now, what about the year? Okay, once again, we don't think about it because our calendars are set, but once again, there's fluctuation within a year as well. There's variability in terms of a year, meaning that we also know that based on a lunar month system, so we know that there are going to be 354 days in a year, meaning what I just did is 29-30, I alternated 29-30, and you do that 12 times, and you come up to the number 354. 354 days, and again, that's imprecise because I know it's not exactly 29 days and 12 hours. I'm just giving right now a very ballpark figure so that you have a basic idea. 354 days is, of course, 11 days shy of a solar year. A solar year is 365 days, and once again, that's also imprecise as well. But again, I'm just giving out ballpark numbers. So there's 11-day discrepancy about between a lunar year and a solar year, which means that all you need to do is just basically go in that order for 3 years, and already the lunar year is falling a month behind the solar year, and keep it up now for just a decade, and you're almost a year behind. In other words, the lunar year is going to fall a year behind. And we don't want that because we know that even though we're supposed to follow the lunar year, but we're supposed to keep Pesach in the spring. Sukkot is going to be in the fall. And the Yamim Tovim are supposed to be seasonal. So therefore, there needs to be a coordination so that the lunar year keeps up with the solar year. So what do? Approximately every 3 years, we're going to add another month in the year. At the end of the year meaning Adar, meaning Nisan being month number one, at the end of the year, so a decision is going to be made, should we be adding a month or not? We don't think about it anymore because it's set. We operate, I'm sure you know this, we operate in a 19-year system, where in the 19-year system that we operate upon, so 7 of those 19 years are going to have a extra month. And it's also been already established, again, about 1,700 years ago, it's already been established which 7 of those 19 are going to have an extra month. But our system is 7-19. Back in the good old days, before everything was set, so Basin would make the determination at the end of the year, meaning when you get to Adar, Basin, and in fact, we're going to be learning about this later in our Masechta and Sanhedrin, Basin is going to be sitting in Adar, and basically, based on climate, temperature, and a whole host of other determinants, they're going to make the decision in terms of whether or not we should add another Adar. In other words, does Pesach need to be a little bit later in? Are we too early in the winter? Are we right? Okay, so all this is to be decided by Beis Din. And our Mishnah, again, just setting up the structure, a Beis Din of how many? So our Mishnah tells us that according to Rav Meir, it's then done in front of a Beis Din of three. Rav Shimon Gamliel Amar b'shalosha matchilin, uvechamisha nosin v'nosin, v'gomrin b'shiva, v'gomrin b'gimel m'uberes. And according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, the discussion starts with three. Continued discussion includes now another two more judges to get to five. And then, in terms of a conclusion has arrived at in front of seven judges. Again, how exactly that works, we're going to talk about later in the Masechta as well, in terms of how we go from 3 to 5 to 7. But, according to Shimon Gamliel, it's done in front of a court, eventually a court of 7. He admits if it's done in front of a court of 3, that's acceptable, but primarily it should be done in front of a court of 7. Smicha Zekenim, in terms of the Smicha, when there is a ruling that's issued by the court, that was an incorrect ruling, and they make a mistake. So there's something called a parhelm davar shel tzibur, a special karban that represents the community and the Sanhedrin that issued an incorrect ruling. So smicha is going to be done on the karban, meaning for most karbanos, you are place your weight on the karban. For this particular karban, you're also going to be placing your weight. Beisdin is going to be doing it. What does that mean, Beisdin? So that's what our Mishnah tells us. That smicha zekenim and the arifas egla bishlosha. So when it comes to the smicha zekenim and when it comes to the procedure of Egla Rufa, it's done with a court of three. Div Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Bechamish, and Rabbi Yehuda says it's done in five, in front of a court of five. And again, later the Gemara is going to be discussing where does this machlokas come from. Ha chalitza v'ami'un b'shlosha. The procedure of chalitza and the procedure of mi'un is done in front of three. Chalitza we're all familiar with. If the brother-in-law opts out of Yibum and does not want to do Yibum, so he still has to break the Zika, and the breaking of Zika is done with a procedure called Chalitza, and it's done in front of a court of three.
The prototype was 10.
Hmm?
The one that's mentioned.
By Rus.
Right.
So, but he wanted, right, he wanted to publicize.
There, no?
Right, he didn't do Chalitza, and secondly, he wanted to publicize the fact that you're allowed to marry a Moabite woman.
Something else.
Right. That was to advertise a different halacha. Anyway, so chalitza is done in front of three, and miyun is done in front of three. And miyun, as we know, and Rashi over here goes through it, the miyun is the process in which a girl underage is allowed to get married, even though she doesn't have a father. Meaning the Torah gives the father the right to marry off his underage daughter, obviously for her betterment and her protection. And in the event that there's no father, so the chachamim, who also wanted to create a scenario in which a girl will get married off, allowed either her mother or her brother to marry her off. This is a marriage which operates only on a din derabanan, and it can be annulled. If she, the girl, when she turns 12 years of age, is interested in annulling the marriage, she may do so. This is a process called miyun. Miyun just simply means, I refuse, I reject. I don't want to be married to this man. So under these circumstances, miyun is done, and our Mishnah is telling us that miyun is done in front of a court of three. There's an interesting Rashi over here. There's a lot of discussion on this Rashi. Rashi over here writes, I'm just going to quote it very quickly. Rashi says, miyunim. So Rashi goes through what I just told you in terms of when miyun occurs. So, and I'm in the third line of the Rashi. You need three, and then Rashi writes, and a lot is discussed about this next point of Rashi. Because even though this is a rabbinic institution, this whole idea of her getting married and her rejecting her husband, this is all a rabbinic institution, but they pattern themselves after a dinda araisa, after a after Torah law. And since Torah law requires three, so therefore Mion, which is a rabbinic procedure, also requires three as well. What is Rashi referring to when he says, and it's patterned after Torah law? What Torah law is he talking about? So I mentioned this just a couple of days ago, but I'll mention it again because it's obviously relevant to this Rashi. So the Noda Behuda Rav Yecheskel Lando writes about this Rashi, that this Rashi seems to be making a very strong reference to the fact that when you have a divorce is done in front of a court of three. That's what Rashi's referencing when Rashi says that it's patterned after Torah law, and that the Torah requires that when you get a divorce, it has to be done in front of a court of three. As I mentioned a couple days ago, just quickly mentioning again, there's nowhere in the Gemara that the Gemara seems to indicate that divorce has to be done in front of a court. In fact, we're going through the Mishnah right now that discusses when a court's necessary and how many judges do you need. And our Mishnah, in fact, doesn't mention anything about get, and the get has to be done in front of a court. But the Rashi over here gives an indication that when it comes to divorce, again, Rashi doesn't say it straight out, so that's why there's room for discussion.
Chalitza is in the Torah.
Right. And it could, right, and Rashi could be referring to Chalitza. Right, correct. So, but again, there's no reference to divorce having to be done in front of a court. No, Rabbi Yehuda says, from this Rashi, we learn that a divorce has to be done in front of a Beis Din. And again, to this very day, whenever a divorce occurs, it's done in front of a Beis Din. Again, the Gemara never says it, but the No, Rabbi Yehuda feels very strongly that that's required, and this Rashi would seem to indicate that that's so. Okay, back to the Gemara. Amin of Shosha, Neta Revai, we're back in the Mishnah. When it comes to the fourth year fruit, which requires a redemption, and Maiser Sheni, She'ein Damav Yiduin, and we don't know its appraised value, B'Shlosha. So we're going to need a court, and we're going to need a court of three in order to establish its appraised value. Ha'ekdeshos B'Shlosha, when it comes to Hekdesh, so that too, if you're coming to redeem Hekdesh, and you need an appraisal, so the panel has to be a court of three in order to assess a proper appraisal. Ha'erchen Ma'amitatlan B'Shlosha, when it comes to both Erech, now Erech is a set value of the Torah, and Metaltalin, the Gemara is going to be discussing what exactly is being referenced over here in our Mishnah. So it's done in front of a panel of three. Stay tuned, the Gemara is going to be more clear about what the Mishnah is making reference to. Rav Yehuda Amar Echem Ehem Kohen. Rav Yehuda says that of the three, one of them has to be a Kohen. HaKarkos Tisha V'Kohen. When it comes to the redemption of property, so that is going to be appraised by a panel of 10, 9, and a Kohen. V'Adam Kayote Behen. Also,
9
plus the Kohen to make 10. Now that is right. Now it bothers you because it's not an odd number, right? Right. Good. So this is one of those rare exceptions in our Mishnah where we're going to be using an even number. A couple of times in this Mishnah we're going to be using an even number. It's coming up again in just a moment. You'll see it. And over here you'll say, or I'll say, okay, I'll suggest that because we're talking about appraisal and we're not talking about adjudication, so therefore an even number is acceptable. Okay, but I still hear your point. Dina Nefashos, I'm sorry, the Adam Kayotze Behem. And also when it comes to the redemption of a person, so you're going to use a panel of 10, 9 plus a Kohen. The Gemara is going to ask the question, we're going to see this in the Gemara, people don't gain sanctity. You don't appraise the value of a person. So stay tuned. The Gemara is going to ask that question. And be patient, though. It's coming up later. Okay. Din in Nefasha. So basically now we've taken ourselves through the first half of our Mishnah. And we talked about basically how when it comes to monetary law, you need a court of three. And then things that are not exactly monetary law, but Makos, Motzi Shemra. So things that may require three, may require more than three, more, you know, perhaps 23. Intercalating the month, intercalating the year. Okay, again, 3, 5, maybe even 7. So, but right now we've been staying in the lower realm cases. Now we move on to Dina Fashas. We've now turned to capital cases. Dina Fashas best in Vishlosha, so when it comes to capital cases, it's tried in front of a court of 23. Harova Vanirva best in Vishlosha. If an animal is involved in sodomy, again, the court that is adjudicating is a panel of 23. Shenema Vrakta Seishavis Abehema. V'omer Vesabehema Tarogu. The animal is put to death. And since, even though it's an animal obviously is not a human, and to call this a capital case seems to be a little bit off, but the fact that the Torah puts the two together, meaning the trial of the person and the trial of the animal. So therefore, by Hekesh, we now know that the animal itself also is judged in front of a court of 23. An animal is responsible for the death of a person. That animal itself is put to death. This is what's called Shor HaNiskal. So it's done in front of a court of 23. Again, to call it a capital case is a misnomer because it's an animal. It's not a human being. But still, that we're going to learn out through Drasha that it's going to be tried in front of a court of 23. Shenemar Asher Yitzakel Gam Ba'alav Yumas. And the animal is put to death, and the owner of the animal also is going to be put to death. Now, we all know that if Rachman Litzlan, God forbid, if your animal kills somebody, so you did not commit a capital offense, meaning your animal obviously killed somebody, but you yourself did not commit a capital offense. We also know you're not going to be put to death because your animal killed somebody. However, the Torah's strong language of Gam Ba'alav Yumas, and we know, Torah Shebaal Peh, that the word Yumas over here just simply means that there's going to be a financial penalty on the owner of the animal. But by virtue of the fact that the Torah uses such language, again, leads us to the conclusion of Kimisus Balam Kach. So it's assured that just like when a person is tried on a capital case, it's done in front of a court of 23, so too, when the animal is tried, animal is going to be tried in front of a court of 23. Any animal that kills the wolf, lion, bear, leopard, bardalus, strange animal, the Gemara always struggles to identify, a snake, if they kill anybody, they're also going to be tried in front of a court of 23. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Kolakodim Lahargan Zacha. Rabbi Eliezer says, open season. If you have any of these animals that kill, don't wait to go to court. Kill the animal as quickly as possible. Anyone who does so quickly is merited. Rabbi Kiva Omer Misasim Be'asim V'Shloshim. Rabbi Kiva says that their death is done in front of a panel of 23. Obviously, he seems to be repeating the opinion of the Tanakhama. If I remember correctly, the Gemara is going to be sensitive to that. Okay. Ain dan lois a shev vesan velois navi sheker velois kohen gadol el al pi basin shel shiv ve'echad. So now you understand the progression of the Mishnah. The Mishnah started with where court cases are required 3, perhaps even 5, perhaps even 7. Then the Mishnah turned to capital cases, which is 23, and now the Mishnah is going to give us our big ticket items, which is going to require a court of 70, or I should say 71. When we are judging an entire shevet, we are going to be judging an entire shevet. If the majority of a shevet is going to be Oved Avodah Zarah, so then the entire shevet is going to be judged, and Navi Sheker, a false prophet, and Kohen Gadol is going to be tried. They're all going to be tried in front of courts of 71. The sources for all this is coming up later in the Gemara. Okay, good. Right. Actually, the mission will mention it. Just... Okay. In terms of going out for Mechamas Rishus, so Beis Din, you need a Beis Din of 71. An interesting Rashi over here as well. I'll just again make reference to the Rashi. Mechamas Rishus, Rashi writes, Kol Mechamas Kari Rishus. Every war is considered a Mechamas Rishus. A loosely translated, not a great translation, it's a... An optional war. However, Levad Mechamas Yehoshua. What's the exception? Meaning, what's Mechamas Mitzvah? Rashi writes over here, Mechamas Yehoshua. Meaning, when Yehoshua goes and he conquers Eretz Yisrael, Shaisa Lechvoshes Eretz Yisrael, that's the Mechamas Mitzvah. Anything outside of that is called the Mechamas Rishus. Now, to take the Rashi super literally, I don't think...
What a defensive.
Right. I don't think, that was going to be my point. I don't think Rashi's just confined to that, meaning, the Rambam writes this, and Ben points it out, and that is if you need to defend Eretz Yisrael, that's also considered Milchemes Mitzvah. The Rambam also writes that when you're going to war against the Malik, that's also considered Milchemes Mitzvah. So, but I'm just sharing with you, Rashi does write this, and I'm just sharing that the Rashi defines Milchemes Mitzvah as Yehoshua conquering Eretz Yisrael. Okay, it's an interesting Rashi. Okay.
That was the first one.
Right, but yeah, I know. But Rashi, you're right. Okay. Anyway, based in Shoshim Ve'echad, Ein Mosifin Al Ha'ir V'Lazaris Al Ha'Pi. Based in Shoshim Ve'echad, annexing a city. Now, again, just pointing to Rashi over here. Rashi says that we're speaking specifically about Yerushalayim, because when you make an annexation to Yerushalayim, what you're really doing is you're broadening boundaries of kedusha. And furthermore, certain people are not allowed entrance into Yerushalayim. So the annexation of Yerushalayim obviously has a lot of halachic significance. And again, if you're going to do that, meaning you can, but if you're going to do that, it has to be done in front of a court of 71. If you're going to set up a Sanhedrin for a Shevet, now I already made reference to the Ramban on his Parash on Chumash in the beginning of Parsha Shoftim. I didn't quote inside, but I told you that Ramban over there writes that every Shevet has their own Sanhedrin. Our Mishnah basically now says it, that the appointment of a Sanhedrin for every Shevet is done by the Sanhedrin HaGadol. Einos in Eir Nidachas LLP based in Shoshim Ve'echad. Eir Nidachas, a subversive city that is Oved of Odezara, is going to be judged by a court of 71. Einos in Eir Nidachas Bisfar, a city that's on the border, is not going to be rendered an Eir HaNidachas. We're going to be discussing more of that later in the parak. Velo Shalosh, Ava Osin Achas Oshtayin. Also, you cannot make three Ire Nidachas in succession, one or two. Again, that's going to be explained better later in the parak. Sanhedrin Gadol Ha'isa Shoshim Ve'echad V'Ktana Shal Esim V'Shlosha. The Sanhedrin Gadol is going to be made up of 71. A Sanhedrin Ketan is made up of 23. Minayin LeGadol Shishoshim Ve'echad. Now, how do I know that the Sanhedrin Gadol is made up of 71? Shenemar, the pasuk says, As for Lishivim Ish Mizikney Yisrael. So Moshe was instructed to gather in Parshas Baalosa 70. Umoshe Al Gabeim. Moshe is not included in the number 70, so he makes 71. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shivim. And Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that no, the Sanhedrin is made up of 70. Okay, Hedy, this is now the second time in the Mishnah where the Mishnah is using an even number, meaning 70, not 71. Moshe doesn't count. We'll talk more about that later on. Now, how do I know that the Sanhedrin Ketan is made up of 23? Gemara goes on to explain. Shenemar v'shaftu ha'edah v'tzilu ha'edah. Eida shofetes, the eida matzelis. So, the way the Torah seems to construct a court is made up of an eida and an eida. Now, an eida and an eida. One eida, meaning this, of course, is not the way it has to be, but at least there has to be a potential of one eida finding the person innocent and one eida finding the person guilty. Harei kan esrim. Now that gets us to the number 20. Now, how does that get us to the number 20? The Mishnah goes on to explain. We know that the word Eida comes out to the number 10. The Torah describing the Meraglim refers to them as an Eida. Yoshua and Kalev at this point in time already excluded themselves from the Meraglim, from the spies. 12 minus 2 is 10. So the word Eida is a reference to 10. Yatsu Yoshua and Kalev. Uminayin lahavi oshlosha. So now, the Torah tells us that when setting up a court, it's going to be an Eida and an Eida. That's 10 plus 10, that's 20. Okay, but that only gets us to the number 20. We need three more. How do we get three more? The Mishnah goes on to explain. Because the Torah says that you should not be following a majority to convict. So that means then that the majority is going to be followed to acquit. Now, so why does the Torah then have to go out of its way to say that you follow the majority? Meaning, it seems to be clear that we're going to follow the majority. So what the Torah is really telling us is that when it comes to conviction, you need a different type of majority than for that of acquittal. For acquittal, simple majority is all you need. So for example, if it's 10 and 10, so all I need now is one more judge to create the simple majority for a acquittal. But the Torah tells us that for conviction, you don't need a simple majority. You need I'm going to use the word supermajority. But by super, I just simply mean one more. So now the number is no longer 21, it's now 22. So, and the Gemara goes on to explain. Lo, ka tiyaskal tova, tiyaskal ra, tiyaskal tova, api echad. For an acquittal, I just need a majority of one. That gets us to the number 21. Hatiyaskal ra, api shnayim. A conviction requires even a greater majority, which is another one, which is 22. Now, 22, you can't have a Beis Din of 22. Ain Beis Din Shakel, most different name, Od Echad. So therefore, now we're going to add one more. Harikan Esrim V'Shlosha. That's how you get to the number 23. V'kama Yebi Ir V'Tei Ru'uy La Sanhedrin. Now, a city requires its Sanhedrin. How big a city do we need? Me'a V'Esrim. So the city needs to be a population of 120. Rabbi Nechemia Omer Masayim Vishloshim. It needs to be 230 keneged Sarei Asaros. Because in order to be a leader, you need a congregation. Every member of the Sanhedrin is considered a leader. The way Rabbi Nechemia does his math is that, so if every member of the Sanhedrin needs to be a leader, so a leader needs a flock needs to be 10. So if it's 23, so the number is 230. Okay, and obviously the Tanakhama does not agree with that. The Tanakhama says 120. In terms of the numbers, the Gemara is going to be discussing where the numbers of the Tanakhama come from. Okay. No, because because the starting point is that the Torah uses the word Eidah twice. So already that gets us to number 20. In other words, 20 is the base. 20 is like serves as like the base number where that's our starting point. Because at least in theory, 10 are going to acquit, 10 are going to convict. It doesn't have to be that way, but in other words, but the Torah says that it has to at least be a possibility. So that's 20 becomes now the threshold, the absolute base. Then we know we need a majority, then we know we need a supermajority for a conviction, and then we know that it can't be an even number. Now, those are the steps that get us to the number 23. All right, we are going to start the Gemara right now, and we're going to be opening up with an extraordinarily simple question, and that is the opening of the Mishnah. In other words, this is now Gemara Kedarko Bekodesh, the way the Gemara normally operates, and that is we are attacking now the first line of the Mishnah, really the first words of the Mishnah. So you go back to the beginning of the Mishnah, and you read, and I'm reading, Dine Mamonos B'Shlosha, monetary law is done with three. And then the Mishnah goes on to say, "Gzeilos vechavos b'shlosha," that theft and damages are also done with three. That's redundant, and the Gemara is bothered by that. And the Gemara is asking, "Atu gzeilos vechavos lav dinei mamonos nenu?" I don't understand, says the Gemara, that gzeilos vechavos, theft and damages, that's monetary law. And so why would the Mishnah now feel the need to basically repeat itself? Monetary law, three. Gzeilos vechavos, three. It's the same thing. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Abbahu. So we have our first approach of this morning, and that is the approach of Rabbi Abbahu. And he says, Mahin Kitani. The way to properly read the Mishnah is that these are not categorically two different cases or two different clauses of the Mishnah, but one is rather coming to explain the other. The Mishnah opening up with Dinei Mamonos B'Shlosha is then to read into, and what is monetary law? Gzeilos vechavalos. This is what he refers to as Mahin Ketani. Look at the first Rashi in the Gemara I'm reading. Hai gzeilos vechavalos pirusha de dine mamonos. It's the explanation of dine mamonos. Delo tema called dine mamonos b'mashma. Because when the Mishnah is talking, the Mishnah is not talking about any type of monetary law. All types of monetary laws. L'mute alavos v'adoshen b'ayin al gimelos chasadim. Because our Mishnah is not talking about loans. Loans are distinct. Why? Because lending has to do with being an act of kindness. Remember, lending was where we're talking about a non-interest loan. So why am I lending money to you if I'm not getting interest? The answer is because I'm a nice guy. And the Chachamim want to encourage people being nice people. And the Chachamim want to encourage lending. And so therefore, as we're going to be discussing at the end of today's daf and the beginning of tomorrow's daf, the Chachamim relax the rules when it comes to lending. And when our Mishnah is talking about a formal judicial process and a court, the Mishnah is not talking about lending. By lending, we want to basically deregulate. That's the basic idea. And I'm reading Rashi. And if there's too much regulation when it comes to lending, no one's going to want to lend. A lender, in order to get back his money, has to go through the formal court process and all the regulations of a court process. Thank you, but no thank you. I'm never going to lend again. So therefore, as we're going to be discussing over the course of today and tomorrow, so there was deregulation when it comes to lending.
obligation to learn?
Yes. It's a mitzvah.
It's a mitzvah.
Yes.
So
yes.
How can they refuse?
How can you refuse? Because go to somebody else for a loan. Meaning, I don't im kesef talves ami. Meaning, if the person wants to lend. In other words, right? Just because I have the money doesn't mean I have to lend. Obviously, it's a mitzvah opportunity.
Mitzvah is no interest. Right, correct.
So Hilkach, so Rashi says, Mematino kama mefarsh mimamatino. Now, what exactly gets deregulated? So we're going to be discussing that over the course of today and tomorrow. But that's the basic idea. The basic idea is deregulation. Okay. So mine ketani, mine dinam amnus gzeles v'chavos, v'ahodos v'ahavos lo. But when it comes to lending, so then no. Meaning no, meaning it doesn't follow the formal court procedure. And if the Mishnah just said the words dine mamonos, that would have given us a wrong impression. That's talking about lending. So that's why the Mishnah has to clarify and say that we're talking specifically about theft and damages. And if the Mishnah just said gzeles v'chavos and the Mishnah not said mamonos havamina who adin dafilo das v'avos, I would have thought that it also includes lending as well. And why would the Mishnah speak specifically about gzeles v'chavos if it also includes monetary law as well, lending as well? Because as we're going to be discussing, the Torah, when discussing theft and damages, and the Torah's requirement of a court, is speaking specifically in the case of theft and damages. Gzeles d'chsiv v'nikrav balabais el ha'elohim. The Torah, in describing theft, says, and you're going to approach the court. The word Elohim over here, it's not Kodesh, it's Chol, it's referring to the court, specifically judges. And as far as Chaval is concerned, well, if I damage somebody's property, I'm going to have to go to court. If I damage somebody's property, I have to go to court. So if I damage somebody's body, I'm also going to have to go to court as well. So Tana Mahin Dina Mamonos, so that's why the Mishnah is very clear that when it says Mamonos, what is it making reference to? Gzeles v'chavos is talking about theft and damages. Avahodos v'avos lo. But when it comes to lending, no. Meaning you don't have to go through a formal court procedure. Okay. We'll stop over here. Tomorrow, we pick up with, when it comes to lending, so the Chachamim were interested in the relaxation of the rules. We don't need a formal court process. Which rules are actually relaxed? Stay tuned. That's coming up. That's the first thing we're discussing tomorrow.